Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I am your host today, and joining me are Matt Van Dale, the Shunack Tribal Biologist, and Jackie Keating, the subsistence resource specialist with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. How are the two of you today?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having us on.
Well, thank you both for being here. So we're here today to discuss a research project that you guys are getting underway with very soon, to my understanding, to discuss examine subsistence issues in the Kodiak community, correct?
That's correct. We'll be out on the ground the second half of February doing what we call comprehensive subsistence surveys. What it is kind of an opportunity to talk to folks on the ground, understand the importance of wild resource use in communities across Alaska. So we're really excited to be doing this in Kodiak and documenting the importance of wild food to folks.
So how does that information relate to your work and what can you do with it?
Sure. So I work for the Division of Subsistence at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And a lot of folks don't know that under state regulations, subsistence is actually the priority when we look at fish and wildlife use. It's really important to Alaskans. It's really important to folks in Kodiak. When you look at wild resource use, households harvest a very significant amount of resources and are reliant on that. So when we collect data to inform the Board of Fish and the Board of Game on regulations, it's ultimately to help ensure that there continue to be reasonable opportunities for folks to harvest these resources that they've depended on for a very long time and that are a big part of our identity as Alaskans.
So I guess let's talk a little bit about subsistence hunting itself and what its distinction is from regular hunting. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So there's lots of different regulations under both state and federal systems. And a great place to look those up is under the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website, if that's something you're interested in. Of course, fish is a resource that's really important to folks. A lot of people probably utilize the buskin under the federal system or go out to Pisag Shack. So again, different regulations usually allows folks to really fill their freezer and be the type of food that people rely on and utilize for their food sources.
So I guess for somebody who might really be outside of the hunting loop, why might somebody want to do subsistence hunting, and what does that provide for them that, say, sport hunting wouldn't?
Oh, there's a lot of similarities in terms of being culturally important, but for subsistence regulations, it tends to be folks that are really utilizing that source as one of their main food sources. And a huge part of the subsistence lifestyle that continuously shows up in our research is the importance of sharing resources. A lot of times it's a community activity. So for example, if we look at the Kodiak villages for deer harvest or something like that, it's a really important thing that's passed down through generations that people learn to do as families and participate in together and share this food throughout the community.
Yeah, Jackie's absolutely right, too. Subsistence is effectively, subsistence activities is an unbroken link to generations past. And many of these subsistence resources that we have here have been here for millennia. And a lot of these activities have been honed over millennia, and it's a customary and traditional link that's remained unbroken. And in modern times of supply chain woes and food security concerns, it's a very intelligent thing to start looking back to the future, in my opinion, with this, and ensuring that we are protecting these resources and especially access to these resources going forward.
So let's get into how this survey that you're looking to do is going to relate to that end. What was the last survey of this scope, and what sort of information was it telling you guys?
So I can talk a little bit about that. Again, we call this a comprehensive subsistence household harvest survey, and it's comprehensive for a couple reasons. One, because it talks about a variety of resources. So more recently, we've done just salmon harvest surveys on the Kodiak Road system. That was probably about 10 years ago now. but a comprehensive survey looks at all the resources that people find important. So that could include, obviously, fish and all kinds of game. It also includes berries and things that are more accessible for folks that might not be super active harvesters in other ways. In addition to just looking at harvest, as I mentioned, sharing resources is a really important part of the subsistence lifestyle. So even if you're not an active harvester, it's important to take the survey if you're selected, because we look at how those foods are important to a community and how they're spread throughout. So the surveys look at resource sharing. They ask folks if they got enough of what they need so that we can have a gauge of how access to subsistence resource is changing over time. And that could be because of changes in water temperature. Maybe folks are having to spend more gas and more time to get to things that they used to have to depend on in the past. We also look at things like income, because that's heavily correlated with people's ability to harvest resources. If you don't have the ability to maintain a boat or buy fuel or things like that. So ultimately, our research really seeks to create a very holistic picture of the subsistence and wild resource lifestyle. So the surveys can take a little bit of time if you're an active harvester. I can talk more about how we do the household selection, but ultimately it creates kind of a community-wide estimate to inform regulations into the future.
So we'll get into the means of the household selection here shortly, but I wanted to ask you about I believe the last study of this nature was done in 1993, correct?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And that's a really good point. So a lot of times in communities, ideally, we would do work like this about every 10 to 15 years. It gives us a good idea of things changing over time. We've done research like this in Kodiak. We most recently did comprehensive surveys in the Southwest Villages about 3 years ago. But since the Kodiak road system is so big and so complex, we are almost going on 30 whole years since we've done this research, which makes it that much more important to really document this and document it well so we have a good gauge of what's changing.
So do you have any assumptions about what might have changed in the last three decades? Are there any sort of shall we say, broader sociological facts that you think might be having an impact on subsistence hunting?
Well, two big things come to mind. One is the amount of resources that are accessible changes over time. And if we look at Kodiak, one big thing is crab and cod and things like that. So when we pump out the final results and look at the top 10 resources that households use, we definitely expect that to change from 1993. I think we saw a lot of crab and some other fish that might be less prevalent now simply due to abundance issues and things like that. Another piece is folks are moving in from villages quite a bit with schools closing and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see how harvest patterns change in that regard if folks are traveling throughout the island to go home to harvest resources and how those networks are maintained.
Another question that I would be very curious to ask you, I know that the general population of hunters writ large, hunting, is had perhaps a very slight uptick in the pandemic, but not enough to reverse the trend that there are fewer and fewer sport hunters every year. I was wondering if that panned out into the realm of subsistence hunting.
Yeah, that's a great question, and that will be really interesting to investigate in terms of Kodiak Road System residents. That is a trend we see in smaller communities quite a bit, just with folks changing career patterns and things like that, that might be learning less of those traditional activities. So I will be interested to see how that plays out, but I'm curious if Matt has any further comments on that topic.
Yeah, thanks, Jackie. And that definitely will be very fascinating to take a look at. And what I'm thinking is particularly in terms of deer along the road system and some of these harsh winters that we've had, is that potentially having lingering effects with the deer population along the road system and access to these deer? Or are we starting to see an uptick in deer along the road system as more and more of them move into town? It'll be very fascinating. And going back to the change in access to resources too, I think another thing that will be very useful for us to look at with these surveys are berries and berry picking. And are we seeing a change with availability of berries as the grass line moves farther into the alpine with climate change? And are we seeing weather patterns that are not as conducive for berries.
So
those would be. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt. But just to be clear, so to that effect, it's not just, you know, hunting and fishing. It's also berries and any other sort of like forageable natural resource. Correct.
Yeah, that is correct. As I mentioned, comprehensive in terms of all resources. So we even talk about things like firewood and seaweed, anything that folks utilize.
So, and you're not just like tracking details, like, for example, how many deer are you taking? What are you doing with the meat? But you're also tracking details like how far are you traveling and what's your means of getting to these different places and hauling back your catch, correct?
That is correct. And especially for really prevalent resources. So this project is funded by the Federal Fisheries Resource and Monitoring Program. So when we talk to folks in the surveys about harvesting salmon and non-salmon fish, we actually do a mapping component that's part of that, just to document the areas that are important and get an idea of how far folks are having to travel.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you as well, are there any sort of, and I did think this was interesting, I believe in some of the documentation that I was able to see before this show about your project, that it mentions that Kodiak is the largest rural community in Alaska, which to me I found ever so slightly amusing because those would seem to be two conflicting ideas. But to that end, I was wondering if there was any information available for other communities in Alaska that you think might give you any sort of prediction as far as what you think you'll find in your survey of subsistence hunting and gathering here in Kodiak.
Yeah, that's tricky in terms of comparison to other communities of this scale. And you're absolutely right. Under federal subsistence regulations, it is the largest classified as non-rural. So that makes it even more important to document the importance of folks being really active harvesters, because it's a really integral part of the community, even though some might argue that Kodiak itself doesn't feel very rural compared to smaller communities. So comparing it to other larger ones, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But as I said, we did recently get to do these surveys in Okyok, Old Harbor, and Larsen Bay. So it will be very interesting to compare the results of those communities to the Kodiak Road System at large.
And another question. So this is just a study of the Kodiak Road System. It's not like island-wide.
That's correct. This one's just of the road system. But that said, we're very hopeful that we'll have funding come through to survey Port Lions and Yuzinki next year. So this will give us a whole island-wide view within about a five-year time span, which is really great.
I wanted to ask you as well if there would be any sort of automatic disqualifiers for any of your potential candidates for the survey. For example, I know that people out of state can hold, out of state hunting permits. I am not to the understanding that people who are not state residents of Alaska can hold subsistence permits for hunting and fishing, correct?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so the way that plays out in the survey is that we're trying to capture full-time residents that are eligible for subsistence. And what that means in terms of selection is we are asking folks that they reside at least 6 months out of the year full-time in Kodiak and consider themselves Alaska residents. So that's the line for eligibility for participating in the survey.
So let's get into what your candidate selection is like. How big is the survey? Who are you determining as being somebody of interest to you? And how is that broad selection process going to work?
Sure. So the survey is a random selection of households. The way we're going to do it is a geographically stratified sample, just to make sure that we get accurate representation for different parts of the road system. So our final goal will be to have about 110 households within Kodiak city boundaries, 110 of kind of the remaining balance of road system, and then 30 within the Kodiak station since its designated place. And we start with a list of income tax that we use for addresses. And that's what we pull these random households from. The way it plays out on the ground is that we have a whole team of surveyors. Some are Fish and Game staff, and others, about half the folks that will be helping us out, are actually locally hired research assistants. They're a huge part of the success of these projects because they know the community well. They know the issues that are important. So they'll be assisting with administering the surveys too. Because they're comprehensive, pretty detailed surveys, they're ones that you actually do with the assistance of one of the survey staff. So how that plays out is if your household's randomly selected, someone will come knock on your door. If you're not home, they'll leave a note. And there's three options for completing the survey. You could do it right at your house in person, either inside or outside, whatever you're comfortable with. If folks aren't comfortable with that, we'll have a couple of public locations set up, some that are outside, knowing that folks have different levels of comfort with the COVID situation right now. And on that note, the third option is you could call your surveyor and just do it over the phone. And those are the three ways to do it. Any household that's selected and ends up completing the survey becomes eligible for a raffle drawing that we'll do at the beginning of March. We'll have two different $100 fuel cards for folks that participate in the survey.
Let's get into the meat.
Yeah, Jackie and her team have a really great system set up with this. And I wish that they would have been in charge of running the census a couple of years back. So hats off to them. Thanks, Jackie.
I wanted to ask as well a bit about the questions and their format. How are you? What sort of questions are you going to be asking people? I know we mentioned that you're talking issues like transportation and distance traveled and what it is that people are taking. Are there any sort of like other things that to perhaps a layman might seem like a strange question to ask somebody, but actually have a big impact in your understanding of subsistence here in Kodiak?
Sure. So one I mentioned that seems out of place for folks is asking about income. But if people are willing to provide that information, it does provide a lot of context into, you know, the ability to actually participate fully in a subsistence lifestyle. We find consistently in our research that income is heavily tied to the ability to provide for your community. So that's an interesting one. The way the survey is broken out, there's a couple different sections, but we cover each broad resource category. So it's kind of broken into salmon, non-salmon fish, marine mammals, small land mammals, large land mammals, plants, and birds and eggs as well. So if you don't harvest a lot, there's a filter question and it goes really fast. If you do, within each of those sections, there's some more detail about what you take and whether or not you got enough and if you shared it and things like that. I do like to stress it's very important and key to our research that all of this is voluntary and confidential. So, of course, we really, really hope that folks will participate in the survey, but you don't have to, and there are no negative consequences if you don't. But when folks do give us the time to participate, it's really valued. And even if you're not an active harvester, it's equally important to participate, and the survey will go pretty quick.
I guess my only question is that given that, you know, non-active harvesters are also included in the survey, are you concerned at all that you might overrepresent sport harvesters and not get enough of the general population of subsistence harvesters?
Yeah, it's a great question, and that kind of comes back to our sample size. So we figure that out with the statistics and the way to get a representative sample. If we're able to get the 250 households that we're hoping for, that should give us a pretty accurate estimate of the community at large. And in addition to that, it's important to point out that even though these are subsistence surveys, we ask about all harvests, even if you're doing it under sport regulations. So we're kind of trying to grasp all harvests in general. Doesn't have to just be subsistence. So anybody that participates in any type of harvest, your feedback is really important.
I was going to turn this conversation back in the direction of subsistence harvesting in general. I was wondering if there was anything else that you would like to say on this program about your survey. Actually, here, excellent question. When will it be occurring and when are you expecting to have results for it?
Sure. So we'll have folks on the ground pretty much the whole second half of February. You'll probably be seeing us driving around and knocking on doors. Hopefully we're able to do the bulk of it in those last 2 weeks. And then it takes us quite a while because these are really long surveys and there's a lot of information. We also, like I said, do the mapping component. We do some key respondent interviews as well to talk to folks. So by the time we analyze all that qualitative and quantitative data, we come back to the community within a year. So probably around this time next year, we'll be coming back to host a community data review meeting. And that's really important. We don't publish any of our data until the community has a chance to review and approve it. Once they do, it becomes publicly available in a couple different ways. We have a technical paper series that anybody can download the full report. We also put together a shorter summary that's a bit more accessible for folks. And then we have online the Community Subsistence Information System. And this is really cool on the Fish and Game website. Any information that the division collects is reported out on the community level, not the individual level. So there's no, it's completely anonymous, but all of our data becomes publicly available, which is really great because if there's an issue you're passionate about or a regulation that you feel like needs to be changed and you want to write a proposal for the Board of Fish or the Board of Game or the Federal Subsistence Board as well, that data is there for the community to use. And we're also there to help walk you through how to use it.
And Dylan, are you going to have our contact info posted on this story too, in case folks want to contact us if they have more questions about this program or interested in being a local research assistant?
Well, if that's your interest, then I can absolutely do that. I wanted
Thank
to,
sir.
Of course, happy to help. I wanted to lastly ask if there's anything that you feel that you've left unsaid or any question that you feel that I haven't asked in regards to the survey that you guys have going on here in a few weeks.
Well, I can take the first stab at that. I think we covered most of the details, but I do just want to reiterate, we really hope that you do participate if you're selected. And I guess one thing I would say that I haven't said yet is that, you know, the survey, of course, has pre-formatted questions. But one of the most valuable parts of this research is the open-ended part at the end where we just ask folks if they have other concerns or notes about things that they've witnessed changing, because the people who participate in these activities know them better than anyone else. They're in tune with what's changing over time and what issues we need to be made aware of. And this is a great venue to express that and get it on the record. And we really appreciate people taking the time to help us out. Matt mentioned too that we do hire the local research assistants. We might have a couple spaces left if folks are interested in working on the project. I think our contact information will be on the website. So please do reach out if you're interested in being more involved. I think that covers most of what I was going to say, but I'm curious if Matt has anything to add.
Yeah, thanks, Jackie. And the main thing that I want to add to is that we're very excited to be working with Fish and Game Subsistence Division and Jackie to update these subsistence use data. And we greatly appreciate all their efforts and dedication to make this happen despite the ongoing challenges of COVID. And I just want to make one last point too, that these surveys are very, very important because the need to quantify use of subsistence resources in Kodiak. Because this is what we need to have to inform and educate policymakers about the critical customary and traditional links that we have with our natural resources. And Chiniac Bay is definitely the subsistence breadbasket for Kodiak, and it's facing substantial environmental pressures. So the more that we can do to demonstrate how important these resources are for us to the state and federal agencies, the better. So thank you, Dylan, too, for bringing us on today and helping us get our message out. Appreciate it.
Certainly. And let's get into some of those issues surrounding the Chiniac Bay. I wanted to ask you as well, the last time I had you on Talk of the Rock, it was a very enjoyable episode and discussion about invasive species and the impact that they have on our local environment. I want to ask you now, what sort of impact do invasive species and climate change at large have on different species and hunting methods that are used in subsistence?
Oh, those crayfish become of our existence. You know, that's another very important thing, and I'm glad you bring this up, is because the last time that the survey was done in 1993, the world was a very different place than it is today. And it's going to be a good data linkage to look how it was then to how it is now, to how it's going to be the next time that we do this survey. And we don't really have any concrete evidence or data to specifically pin changes in salmon abundance within the Buskin to invasive species or climate change yet, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It just means that one or two data points, you only get a line or a point versus a trend. And it's going to be very important going forward to start casting a wide net, no pun intended, to start gathering all of these data together to see if anything starts to come out, such as climate change and increasing temperatures, if temperatures are increasing in the freshwater, temperatures increasing in the maritime environment, presence of crayfish, all of those things are going to be coming together, and they could definitely have a very profound impact and potentially negative impact on subsistence resources, especially one of the key components of subsistence resources along the Kodiak road system of sockeye salmon.
And to reiterate, that translates to more than just like the sport fishing population. In the case of subsistence, this has much more to do with people's livelihoods and food security at times, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to me, I see food security as being an essential component of national security as well. And in these times of what's going on in the globe, the more that we can do to protect our food security and make sure that our community is self-reliant, self-sufficient, robust, better.
I wanted to ask you both about subsistence hunting and conservation. I know that there is a, in the case of like sport hunting and sport fishing, there's a whole lot of work that's done to manage those resources. I was curious as to what, if any, effect that subsistence harvesting has in that role and how that plays into the broader part of management. I should point out that we're down to about our last minute here for this show.
Sure. So I'll reiterate quickly that under state regulations, subsistence is the priority. So like any other use, commercial or sport, it's closely managed. When we look at conserving resources, say if there's a shortage of something, subsistence will be the last thing to close down because we do consider that the priority. But it is closely tracked through things like the permit system and these surveys as well to create a close idea. So I think it's part of a very effective management system that we have in the state.
Well, I believe we're at the end of our show, so I want to thank you both so much for your time today. This has been another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. Joining me again was Jackie Keating, a subsistence resource specialist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and Matt Vendale, the tribal biologist for the Shunack Tribe. Thank you both so much again for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dylan. Have a good day.